This morning, chapter 21, we'll be looking at 21 and hopefully 22 this morning. So if you want to turn your Bibles there or follow along on the slides up above, that's fine. We're going to go ahead and begin the class with a word of prayer, and I've asked Barry Root if he'd like to direct our minds in that prayer. All right, it's good to have everybody here this morning, and I thank Mike for filling in last Sunday. I think two Sundays ago I thought that there was possibly going to be a guest speaker and that we wouldn't be having the class, but so my fill-in comment was not that I knew Mike was going to do that. I had a kind of rough week with treatment, and so I appreciate him filling in during my absence last week. So this morning now we're in Job chapter 21, and we'll take a look at that here. If you remember, as we review for ourselves, that we have a situation where we have a real series of events. These conversations really did happen, and Job really did suffer the sufferings that he had with all the losses that he had. I remember that he was seen by God as a perfect man. He was one that was upright. He eschewed evil. He feared God, which is, I think, very important. He understood the relationship that he had with God and who God was, and that God was in control. And we see, as we hear Job speak, he talks consistently about that, that even though he's struggling through all these things, at the end of time, he's gonna be with God face to face to answer for whatever he needed to answer for, or to hear from God what's happened. He's made a plea to God that he would respond to him now. He wants to hear from God now for understanding what's happened. And although we've gone through, you know, a number of weeks, 10 weeks of talking about this conversation is happening, let's say within a day, these friends have come to talk to him. Remember, Job was put in a spotlight, and we need to remember that the that spotlight was put on him by God. God said, look at Job, see how he is. And he was talking to Job's enemy and to our enemy and to God's enemy, and that is Satan. Satan and God had this conversation. And God says, consider my servant Job. And so we have a common enemy with Job, and that's Satan. We all have the same enemy, and he's God's enemy. And so when these things come upon Job, they're allowed to happen by God, but God has put boundaries on what Satan could do. And Satan's desire is that Job would curse God, that he would turn from God, he would blame God for all of this, he would have a different attitude towards God, changing his attitude that he wanted to change. We saw that all the things that happened to Job when in just a few moments, all the disasters that happened, all his possessions were taken, his children were taken, he was put into poverty, if you will. All these things that happened in a crushing manner had come upon Job. And sometimes we might feel like that happens in our days, where things are just not, they're just, everything seems to be stacked against us. And you might have had those days, not to any great extent like Job had, but you know, the car battery dies, you bounce checks at the bank, and you lose your job, you know, something like that. And that happens in one day. And so we think, well, there you go. There's our crushing day. I'm going to get wrapped up by my cord here. Somehow I think I got a got another little extension piece I need to put in here. Maybe. I don't give instructions. Sorry about that. Okay. So, we're going to take a look at chapter 21 then today. As we remember, as we close out chapter 20, the friends that have come, Zophar has given a talk, a response to Job. And the thing that he basically says in chapter 20 is, so I'm going to show you what a wicked person looks like. All the things that point to the fact that someone is wicked and they're against God, that God is going to show punishment to them. And he gives a whole list of things, and through all those things, he says, basically, you look like that picture. The situation that you're in, Job, you are a wicked man. That's how he ends, basically, his conversation at the end of chapter 20. And so Job is, his friends are not ones who are there to build him up, but they're basically heaping it on. Okay? They're putting more and more pressure upon Job, pointing to these facts. They don't seem to address towards God himself, but they're looking at the worldly situation. And so in chapter 21 and verse 4, Job's going to respond to this comment that Zophar has made, a series of events that he said about how the wicked look. And we have the same problem today where we look out and we see, you know, someone who's doing evil. It's obvious that they're an evil in a situation, at least from our perspective. That's what it looks like. They're doing things against God's will, and they're prospering. And how is that possible? How is that possible the wicked should prosper and the good people, let's say Job, are punished? Okay, what is happening here? So in verse 21 and verse 4, Job responds, "As for me, is my complaint against man." So am I complaining against man in situation? He says, no. And as it were, why should I not be impatient? So I'm impatient in my request for an answer to these questions. And then he says in verse 5, "Look at me and be astonished. Put your hand over your mouth." So if you are to look at me and you really knew me, as you say you're my friend, you would understand that this has not been my life. That's not been how I've conducted myself. And for you and your charges against me, you need to just put your hand over your mouth and be silent. Be quiet. Because you're not making any sense. You're not being profitable in any way. It says, and then Job says, "Even when I remember, I am terrified." So Job thinks about life situations and all that could happen to individuals. He's terrified of the things, and he's trembling takes hold of my flesh. And his whole situation that's before him, he understands that he can't make a difference in that, and he's afraid. He's concerned. So he asks a question then in verse 7, "Why do the wicked live and become old?" You know, why couldn't there just be a situation where, and we wouldn't want this to happen, where, you know, you sinned and boom, poof, you're gone. Right? Well, we wouldn't want that for each of us. This room would be empty right now. Right? So, why do they become old? Yes, and become mighty in power. So these people that are wicked, who are against God, let's consider, as Job's going to do here, then, these people, if we look at it. And he's going to ask his friends to do that. Their descendants are established with them in their sight. So they didn't have kids and then they die and then their children grow up and have children. You know, they saw the generations that would follow, their grandchildren, maybe their great-grandchildren. They were able to establish that and see that. Okay, that's a blessing. Okay. And their offspring are before their eyes. Well, what's Job's situation? Well, his situation is we don't see that he's seen those children's generations at this point. Their houses are safe from fear. And he's talking about the evil person, okay? The people that are definitely wicked. Well, they seem to be safe from any type of fear that would come there. Neither is the rod of God upon them. So in verse 9. So this rod, you know, Job's feeling it. He's feeling this tremendous pressure, this attacking that is coming as he sees from God, that this rod of reproach, this rod of correction that would come upon him. He talks about, well, even the things that they have. Their bulls breed without failure and their cows calf without miscarriage. I mean, you know, even their animals, just being animals, they don't have problems. They don't have issues that are in their thing. They send forth their little ones like a flock and their children dance. So there's happiness. There seems to be some kind of joy that's all part of their family in all of their reaction. Well, that's not me. Okay, but as he's pointing out, when you look at these that are in the world, they sing to the tambourine and to the harp and rejoice with the sound of the flute. So you don't have musical times and these kind of luxuries, we might say, when things are really bad. We're not dancing to the flute in the middle of the war or middle of great strife and struggle that's there. But he says that's what it looks like for these that are wicked. They spend their days in wealth, in a moment go down to the grave. So they live their lives and they die. Well, here Job has lived his life and he's in torment. Right? This trouble that's come upon him. So in verse 14, and they say to God, so let's look at how the difference here in verse 14. They say to God, depart from us, for we do not desire the knowledge of your ways. So the people who are wicked, who appear to be having all these good things happen to them this life, their attitude towards God is this. Just depart from me. I don't need to know your ways. Now, has that been Job? His friends know that this is not Job. That's not how Job conducted his life. He was very concerned about what God wanted for him, and he did not ask God to go away. He's asking God to come. I need some help. Well, he's asking God. I'm pleading for God to come and help. And they also say, who is Almighty that we should serve him? They don't care. They don't seem to be concerned at all about him because their life is good for them now. And they're not concerned about anything that's past that. And what profit do we have if we pray to him? That's what the wicked man is saying. But that's not what Job's saying in his plea, is it? He's saying the only profit I have is if I have God. And God's the only place I can plead to make my petitions known. There is nobody else. But that's not how the wicked act. But look at them. They have some prosperity. Their prosperity is not in their hand, and their counsel, the counsel of the wicked, is far from me. So from Job's perspective, he's not counseling with those that are wicked. He's not choosing those that would be that way. How often is the lamp of the wicked put out? He asks the questions of his friends. How often does that happen? Where have you seen that happen? How often does their destruction come upon them? Do you see a similar thing happening to those who are definitely wicked? Because his friends have never pointed to any specific thing. In the next chapter, they're going to try to do that. But they haven't pointed to anything specific. They just said things like, you know, this is something that's within you that you've got hidden under your tongue, that you're concealing from God, you're trying to hide it from God, you're hiding it from us. It must be there. But he says here, these things, those who are wicked, how often have you seen that destruction come upon them? Is that how God deals with them? The sorrows of God distributes in his anger. So he's going to, God's going to provide a reward or destruction for them. They are like straw before the wind and like chaff that a storm carries away. So they're fleeting in what they have. In verse 19, they say, God lays up one's iniquities for his children. Let him recompense him that he may know it. This is how they view what God does to those who would be against him. Let his eyes see his destruction and let him drink the wrath of the Almighty. So we're going to put that off. We're going to bring that destruction to others. For what does he care about his household after him? That is the wicked man. He's not concerned about anything but basically what's going on today. What he has today, he's not concerned about tomorrow. He's not necessarily concerned about what his family or his inheritance might be when the number of his months is cut in half. So at some point when he dies, he doesn't seem to care anything about what may be happening in the future because he would see nothing for the future. It would all be just at an end. And then in 22, can anyone teach God knowledge? Is that anything that we can do? No, it's not anything we do. Since he judges us, those on high. So he's up above. He's going to, but we can't teach him knowledge. We can only ask from him for that. One dies in his full strength, being wholly at ease and secure. So the wicked are going to die this way, at full strength, full vigor, it would seem. And they have ease and security. His pails are full of milk, and the marrow of his bones is moist. So everything seems to be pretty good. All the things around him are as they should be. They lie down alike in the dust, and the worms cover them. So the result is that the one who's wicked, who has all these things before him, all this wealth, everything seems to be okay, his children are happy, they all are going to lie down in the dust, just like the good man. And this idea of these worms or destruction is going to come upon both in this life. Look, I know your thoughts and the schemes with which you would wrong me. So he turns his attention back in verse 27, back to his friends, and he says, I understand you, and these schemes or this method that you're trying to harm me with. He has, like I've mentioned before, I think one of the things Job had is that he might have had some of these same thoughts before with his friends about how God dealt with the wicked. But now, because the things are upon him, as he mentioned, you should be fearful because it's not the way we thought it was. We're not the way I thought it was, because here I've been a perfect man. I don't think he called himself a perfect man. I think that's from God, but he was doing all he could do towards serving God, and yet these things are coming upon him, and he's horrified with what that potentially means. What could it mean that these things have come to me? So in verse 28 he says, for you say, where is the house of the prince? And where is the tent and the dwelling place of the wicked? So throughout these conversations we've talked about how his friends have brought up that, you know, the place where things are right, there's good, there's tranquility, there's peace. And where there's things that aren't good, there's destruction, and there's there's not good things. It's not a pleasant place. And so looking at this contrast about where are you? Are you right, you know, with God, or are you against God? And what does that look like in this idea of your habitation that you would have? Have you asked those who traveled the road, Job asked. So interesting comment about that. So have you talked to other people that are traveling this, maybe the road of life, or have just in conversation, have you talked about these things that traveled a certain road or have experienced certain things? Have you talked to the wicked about, you know, their relationship with God? Have you talked to those who are righteous about their relationship with God and how all this fits together? Have you made a thorough investigation, maybe, of the things that are there? And do you know not their signs? So, are you adequately understanding and making the right application of the situation with those who are either in seem wealthy and those who, in Job's case, who are definitely being attacked. He says, "For the wicked are reserved for the day of doom." So Job, as he has pondered this particular dilemma, makes this statement. So there's going to be a day when the wicked are going to have a day of doom. And they shall be brought out on the day of wrath. So there's going to be a day when the wicked are going to pay the price. Now, does Job know exactly when that is? No, but his knowledge of who God is that God's going to make them pay. There's going to be a time that's going to come when they are going to suffer for what they did. It says, "Who condemns his ways to his face, and who repays him for what he has done?" So this idea of face-to-face, that's going to happen. We see that Job had talked before about being face-to-face with God, even if he died. He expected to stand before God and deal directly with God one-on-one. And so he poses this question, who's going to be the one who repays for the things that someone has done against God? "Yet he shall be brought to the grave and a vigil kept over his tomb." So the result is that we're all going to die, evil men, righteous men, and there's going to this idea of maybe the tomb being the vigil over it. It's watchful that someday someone's going to come back. That could be the implication that we have there. In verse 34, then, "How can you comfort me with empty words, since falsehood remains in your answers?" So your answers that you're given to me for my condition are not right. Okay? They're empty words. There's of no value to them. There's nothing that you're doing that can help understand this dilemma outside of your condemnation, if you will, of Job, which is what they've done. They have sought out to find a way to convince Job of his sins when they don't even know what those could be. And in the next chapter, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So, anyway, kind of through chapter 21, any thoughts or observations or points? Larry? Mm-hmm. Right, they're going to have to answer to God, and so they're living as we see later. You know, they talk about how they view God. That there's, why do I pray to Him? Why do I have to concern myself with God? Really, this earth is all there is. I'm going to die, and I'm not going to worry about the future because there is really no future. There's just death. Barry?
Just and the unjust live. And the just and the unjust, they die. They go through life and they as he was pointing out to the evil, nothing's happening to them, they're prospering, they go through and they see their children live, and then they die. The process of life. So Job is saying, wait a minute, there has to be something more to it than when you look evil, or you look like you're suffering, or you look like you're having a bad time, that God just looks at it and punishes you. And it's sin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, no, there has to be another reason for suffering other than punishing for the wicked. He's coming to a conclusion, and Job started, man, we're going to talk in 22. He started to know that, no, this is not the reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's another reason why I'm punishing. He's going to start from verse 1, I think, and 2. And he's going to tell you a little bit about, I think, that reason.
Okay. Good thoughts. Anything else? Yes. Go.
Towards the end of the chapter, you can tell he's frustrated at the start, but we also know that in the end, God wanted Job's friends to have Job pray for them that they be forgiven their foolishness and their lies. And Job's calling their lies here.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a time where you just need to do that sometimes. It's okay to call a spade a spade.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to be nice already. And I'm not saying this is the ultimate example of how we should do things, but
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, and the the interesting part of this whole conversation, I guess if you're, I don't know if you're to look at it from psych major point of view, and I'm not a psych major, but you know, this conversation would, it's hard to imagine having this conversation if you were Job or one of the friends, if you put yourself in that spot. They don't interrupt each other, you know? For the harshest things that are being said, they let the person talk, and they say what they say. And like you said, here with Job, he says, you're full of falsehoods. Well, you know what? This is about the 12th conversation that's gone back and forth. And after so many of those, how many would raise, you don't have to raise your hands, but think about it. If you've been in a conversation, you've been told 4 or 5 times that your falsehood, whatever, you're probably not going to stick around with the conversation much longer. You're probably not going to do that. Even being friends. So I'm impressed by the fact that the friends, their bonds as friends, were even able to overcome this great struggle. This is a big struggle between them. The friends have come to preserve and to protect Job, or to help him figure out what he's done wrong. Even though they're wrong in that, they're trying to do that as his friends. And as Job, to his friends, is willing to listen to what his friends have to say. Now, whether the friends came on Satan's behalf or God's behalf, they are there for a purpose to basically try to I guess I would say they're probably more for on Satan's behalf, to turn Job away from God, to have him curse him and give up with all that he had. So very interesting exchange how they dealt with each other in the very harsh things that they've said. You know, you're full of falsehood, you know. Put your hand over your mouth. Stop talking. Whether
inner soul in person. And so man's thinking on all this isn't the benchmark and we think what's going to be going on.
Right.
It's God, he's going to get later in the book. God is our creator, and he is our judge, and he's the one that set up the rules and laws of living for his creation.
Right.
So, like I say, whether you're saying something falsely about a good man or a wicked man, that all this doesn't matter. It was, what is God's position in all these situations?
Right. Yeah, and Job's comments in previous chapters have been, there's nobody else I can turn to. I have to plead towards God because he's the only one that can give the answer to my question, to answer this question, and I'm pleading for him for that. And you would think that his friends, hearing that plea, would help in that petition process because they don't really know the answer either, even though they think they do. Barry?
Says, but in your mocking, this is what I want you to do. I want you to remove the harsh words.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's trying to tell his friends. Yeah, I can take all your stuff, and I can decide whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to be civil about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Okay. Well, let's move on to chapter 22 then. In chapter 22 and verse 2 now, Eliphaz is going to then talk. He's going to rebut basically some of the things that the things that Job has said regarding this idea of wickedness and what it looks like and whether a man is in that condition. So, can a man be profitable to God? Though he is wise, may be profitable to himself. So, the question he poses is this idea that, you know, you're trying to show yourself as something that's of profit to God. Is that really something that you can do? Is it possible that that would be? And verse 3 says, is there any pleasure in the Almighty that you are righteous? Well, I mean, that's his question. Well, behind the scenes, I would say yes. I mean, there was some pleasure in God as he looked out and he saw a man who was doing all he could to serve him. And he pointed that out to Satan. He said, here's a man who's willing to do that. Here's a man who is able to work towards righteousness. Or is to gain to him that would make your ways blameless. So towards God, are you basically setting yourself up as being something very special? Is it because of your fear of him that he corrects you and enters into judgment against you? So this idea seems to be that, well, somehow is it possible that because you're fearing God, that's kind of put you on his radar, and so because you fear him, he's going to correct you. Seems to be the idea there towards Job. Is your wickedness great and your iniquity without end? In verse 5. So, we're not going to tell you exactly yet, but he's going to get to it here in a minute, that your wickedness is great and your iniquity is without end. That's who you must be. That's who you must be as you live your life. For you have taken pledges from your brother for no reason. So some way of binding your brother in some way. These are the charges that he's making then against Job. For we haven't said it at this point. We've tried to be polite in not bringing these up specific. But we're going to make some specific charges here. So you've bound your brother by some requirement of some way. For no reason you've bound him, and you've stripped them naked of their clothing. So you've taken everything that they've had. That must be what you've done, is the charge. You have not given the weary water to drink. Now, is he pointing to them here in verse 7? You know, we've been here for a while and you haven't given us anything to drink. But the charge is that the weary that have come to you, you haven't taken care of their needs. And you have withheld bread from the hungry. That's what you must have done, Job. These are the charges that they're commenting towards Job and how he's dealt. And verse 8 then. But the mighty men possess the land, and the honorable men dwell in it. This is not you, Job. Because look at what's happened to you. The mighty men have come and taken all the things that you've had. And the honorable men dwell in it. There's other people that are honorable because of the things that we've charged you to have done. You have sent widows away empty, in verse 9. Well, you know, these are some big charges. But they're kind of made in big, sweeping, general statements, aren't they? And the strength of the fatherless was crushed. So you have, the fatherless, the orphans, you've just destroyed them somehow. You have not been there to support them. Therefore, snares are all around you because of all these things that you've done. These are the things you must have done. These snares are all around you, and sudden fear troubles you. So these are the results that are going to happen. So the results of all this that you've done then, Job, and you would think, you know, these are some pretty harsh charges, but these are ones that can't be really substantiated. They're not saying, you know, on May 5th or whatever time, and so-and-so came to you, and we know because she had come to us because you had sent her away hungry and crushed her children or whatever. They're not saying that. They're just saying these must be the type of things that you've done. So in verse then 11 he says, or darkness so that you cannot see, and abundance of water covers you. So here's where you live. You live in darkness and water. So if you could think about a bad place to be, it would be in total darkness covered in water. I think that would be a pretty horrible spot to be. You can't see how to get out of it, and you're going to drown, right, in this water. So it's not like being in a cave. You have double trouble. Is not God in the height of heaven, and see the highest stars, how lofty they are? So, you know, here's God in heaven, and he has all the stars that are about him. And you say, what does God know? I don't know that Job said, what does God know? I think he's probably said more to the fact that God knows all and his petition for him. Can he judge through the deep darkness? Well, Job has talked we've had a lot of discussion about being in the darkness and being able to see through the darkness what's happening. I think more from a perspective of Job looking out, trying to see what's happening. But here you see that it's kind of turned around where it's about this question about whether God can see through this darkness. Thick clouds cover him so he cannot see. And he walks about the circles of the heaven. So, kind of puts God in kind of a less than powerful position. Will you keep to the old way? So the question to Job is, you're going to keep to the way that you've conducted your life and the path which wicked men have trod. So, this is what a wicked man looks like. We've seen that in the last couple chapters. You're going to continue down that path. You're going to continue to do that, Job. Is this the path that you continue to choose to take? Who were cut down before time, whose foundations were swept away by a flood. So, back to, you know, this allusion towards the flood of the world, right? It was wickedness everywhere, and God wiped that out. He destroyed all of that. They say to God in verse 17, depart from us. What can the Almighty do to them? So this is this question about, again, what a wicked man says towards God. Yet he filled their houses with good things, but the counsel of the wicked is far from me. So, this counsel, this direction, that he would say, whether this is Eliphaz saying that towards Job, towards that he's not wicked, or whether this is a question towards Job and his statement that he's made before. The righteous men see it and are glad, and the innocent laugh at them. So the destruction that's going to come to those who are wicked are going to be seen in two different ways. Some are going to see that, I'm sorry, about how they're going to see this, the good things that are going to come to those that are righteous, and the innocent are going to laugh at those things that are before them. Surely our adversaries are cut down, and the fire consumes their remnant. So the challenges that are going to happen before righteous men and evil men and their adversaries are going to be destroyed. How adequate? Now acquaint yourself with him and be at peace. So his question to Job is to get yourself right with God. You're going to need to acquaint yourself with him. Evidently, you have lost that relationship that you say that you have. Thereby, good will come to you. Well, that's the quest that they would see, is that if you have this prosperity and you have all these good things happen to you, God must be with you. He says then, receive, please, instruction from my mouth. So Eliphaz is requesting that Job take a listen to what he's telling him and lay up his words in your heart. So lay up God's words in your heart, which is something that Job, if they remembered who Job was, they know that this is who Job is as a person. But again, this is all that Eliphaz can bring forth to him. Then you will lay up your gold in the dust. So in the ground that you're going to, the gold of Ophir among the stones of the brooks. So this Ophir was a place of pure gold. It was a place of a great quantity of gold. So these great things are going to happen to you if you're going to lay up his words in your heart. Yes, the Almighty will be your gold and your precious silver. That's who you're going to put your trust in, who you're going to have your blessings from. For when you will hear, then you will have your delights in the Almighty and lift up your face to God. So, again, these challenges to that Eliphaz makes to Job are to try to get him to turn his life around, to make changes in his life so that he will be seen right with God. You will make your prayer to him and he will hear you, and you will pay your vows. So he's gonna hear you if you'll pray to him. But we see that through the struggles that Job has, as he's been calling out to God to answer him so that he can know what to do, to understand his conditions. But Eliphaz is basically saying, you know, you haven't done it right yet. And so once you do that right, then he's going to instruct you on what you're going to need to do to make things right. You also declare a thing, and it will be established for you, so light will shine on your way. So you're going to establish your path then. He's going to declare these things to you so that you can be right with him. Then they cast, when they cast you down and you say, exaltation will come, then he will save the humble person. So if you humble yourself before God, he's going to lift you up. He will even deliver one who is not innocent. Yes, he will deliver by the purity of your hand. So if you make yourself pure, even though you're not innocent in all these things, God's going to, Eliphaz is stating, then God can lift you up. He can turn you around. He can make you the person you need to be. Again, these are all the comments that Eliphaz has towards his desire to have Job change his life and to be different. So as we finish 22, any comments or thoughts on 22? Barry?
Prior
Yeah. Okay. I didn't hear a bell, but I guess our time is done. So I hear children out there. So we'll be done. So anyway, I appreciate your comments and thoughts this morning. We'll take a look starting in chapter 23 then next week.